This is Digital Story Podcast number 613, December 12th, 2017. Today's theme is the top five photography products of 2017. I'm Derek Story. It's been a good year for photography announcements. Across the board, we've seen both innovations and refinements. But at the end of the day, what were the five that really stood out? I'm going to share mine, in no particular order, on today's TDS podcast. So as I look back on the year and I look back at the announcements that were made during the year, there were some real biggies, some real expensive items, and then there were some that were, under $500 and just amazing in their own right. And I tried not to discriminate against expensive items on this list. I figured, look, if it's a top-tier item, then it's a top-tier item, and I need to go ahead and list it. Now, that being said, just because in my mind, as I look at it, I go, yes, I think this is one of the best of 2017, that doesn't necessarily mean that I would go out and spend that money on it. So I kind of wrestled with this because I was thinking about maybe I should just talk about the top five things that I would actually buy. And, believe it or not, three of the five things on this list I've either bought or have in my budget for 2018. So I think I did a little bit of each. So I'm going to start out with one that I think is very affordable and just amazing. I'm going to give you two really heavy hitters, both of them over $3,000. And then we'll kind of ease back into reality with the last two. So the first one, man, I love this item. The first one for the year, the DJI Spark. And right now, you can get it for $349. If you click on the link in the show notes, $349 for this compact quadcopter, I think is just a steal. It has an integrated camera, has motorized stabilization. It captures 12 megapixel photos, 1080p full HD videos. You can do aerial selfies with it. And what are they called? Dronies? I think they're called dronies. It can go up to 31 miles an hour, 16 minutes of flight time. And you can just use it for all sorts of stuff. Now, the way that I use it, I went super nimble with this. Because, this is a drone that I can just put in my existing camera bag without having to take anything else out. It is that compact. I just absolutely love it. There's no setup time. In fact, I went flying with a friend of mine the other day who has a Phantom, and I was up recording, shooting, doing all my stuff, and had landed before he even got his Phantom off the ground. He was having to put propellers on and do all this kind of stuff. I just, push the button twice, fire it up, pull out my iPhone, and I'm off flying. So I use it in its simplest form. I fly it with the iPhone. I don't even have a controller. The only accessory that I sprung for was the extra battery. And I do like having the extra battery, although I don't use it that much. Most of the time I can accomplish what I need to accomplish with 15 minutes of airtime, which is basically go up, shoot some video, shoot some stills, and then bring her back down. Just having that capability with me gives me a whole new dimension, absolutely a whole new dimension to my coverage. And a lot of what I'm shooting right now locally has to do with the firestorm that happened in October here in Santa Rosa. So I'm shooting from the ground, but I'm also shooting from the air. And it's very interesting how different the shots look from the air than from the ground. And I don't go way up. I'm not shooting at 130 feet or anything like that. Most of my shots that I'm doing from the air are around 60 feet or so. I just want that different angle. The other thing that I've just gone nuts over with this quadcopter, it captures 12 megapixel photos, but it also has this amazing panorama mode. And you have four different types of panoramas to choose from. I usually do the horizontal one, more of the traditional panorama style, where I believe it captures, I want to say it captures eight or nine shots. And then I take those files and I don't let the application the DJI application stitch them together. Unless I'm just looking at a preview, what I do is I take those master files and then I use Lightroom, which does a great job of creating panoramas. I think it's one of the best things that Lightroom does, for me anyway. I let Lightroom pull those together and then make me this wonderful high resolution shot that I captured with a little drone that sits in the palm of my hand. The other thing that I want to say about the DJI Spark is that it is really well made. This is a solid piece of equipment. It is quality materials. The electronics in it are superb. It is just an outstanding device. I resisted getting into drone photography until the Spark came along. And then the minute I saw the Spark, I knew that this was the right device for me. And now that I've had it for, well, I don't know, what, about half a year, 6 months, I have to say that for me, it clearly is one of the best products of 2017. And I paid $499 for mine, and I still think it's a super value, and you can get them now for $349. DJI Spark, it is definitely one of the bright spots for 2017. Now let's move from a nimble drone to Canon. And I don't mean Canon the camera brand, because I'm talking about the Nikon D850. This just has to be on the list. I just don't see how you can have a list of top camera announcements for 2017 and not have the D850 on that list. Has a newly designed 45.7 megapixel CMOS sensor, has a new image processor, super high resolution. There is not an optical low pass filter, so I think that helps with sharpness even a bit more. 7 frames per second continuous shooting, up to 51 consecutive frames. ISO goes from 32 to 100,000 to 400. And then 4K UHD video recording. And it is built like a tank. If you want extremely high quality images and you do not mind carrying around a DSLR camera body that is a bit on the large side and a bit on the heavy side, I don't see how you can resist the D850 unless that $3,297 price tag puts you off. But of course, that price tag is for professionals and people who are using it for their work, because that's what it's designed for. It is not a camera that I would personally buy, but it is a camera that I can look at, that I can admire, and that I can tip my hat to Nikon for continuing to do what they do, which is just make outstanding DSLRs. And the D850 is one of the best examples of that that I've seen from them in recent history. The other heavy hitter this year, the Sony Alpha A7 R3. And this one comes in at $3,198. It's a bargain compared to $3,297 for the D850, right? Okay, Sony is on fire right now. 42.4 megapixel CMOS sensor, an updated image processor, 10 frames per second continuous shooting with improved autofocus performance, more reliable subject tracking, updated fast hybrid AF system, 399 phase detection points, and 425 contrast detection points. Think that'll get it done there for you? ISO range, standard ISO range is 100 to 3200, but it can be expanded 50 to 100,000 to 400, 4K video. And then on top of all that great stuff, it has one feature that I know you know I love, which is sensor shift image stabilization, which is supposedly up to 5.5 stops. So, of course, this is a low-light beast. It is a crazy full-frame camera. So this is a full-frame mirrorless camera that can perform with some of the best cameras out there. For those that like the mirrorless form factor, don't mind a little bigger camera, don't mind bigger lenses, and have the budget, I mean, this is a crazy camera. To be able to have a full-frame experience in a mirrorless body and then have this sort of specification, as I said at the top of this piece, Sony really is on fire. They're really doing some great stuff. And I just, again, don't see how you can have, you know, top products of 2017 and not have at least one of the Sony Alphas on the list. You can debate as to which one should be on the list, and you might be thinking that right now, but I'm going to go with the A7R III. It is a crazy, crazy camera. All right, the fourth item on this list, and I think this definitely is a photography product, and that is the iPhone X. You know, I was just in Charleston, South Carolina, working with some other journalists on the Olympus lenses, and I'm going to talk about that in the next story a bit. I think about half of us had iPhone X right there. And I was just comparing notes with these guys, you know, about, you know, where this device fits into their photography. And almost everyone admitted that they use the iPhone X a lot, even though they've had it a short time, just for everyday photography. And I think that is the thing that has changed with mobile photography, is that it's gone from, well, it's the best camera because it's the one that you have with you at any given moment, to, you know what, it's just a damn good camera. it's just a damn good camera. And the thing that I have noticed with the 10 in my shooting is that the second camera module, the one that is, you know, quote unquote telephoto, even though it's more like a 50, that is an incredibly sharp lens. It's still fairly fast at f2.4, and it is just killer. I mean, it just takes amazing pictures. I am shooting more, actually, than I anticipated at 2x with the iPhone X, which means I'm using the second camera. It's optically stabilized. The iPhone X is the first camera that Apple's made that optically stabilized that second camera module. Of course, it has a 12 megapixel sensor, so that gives you plenty of resolution for most everyday stuff. The display is beautiful, absolutely beautiful display. So not only while you're shooting, but also while you're reviewing your images, they look terrific. They really do. And then on top of that, for those of us that are in the Apple ecosystem, having those images automatically go up to iCloud, having them automatically show up on all of my computers and other devices, it is just a wonderful workflow. It's a great camera. And I think Apple has done a great job with the iPhone X. Now, of course, the big competition is from the new phone from Google. I think a lot of folks just for photography are picking the Google phone. That's okay. I think DP Review gave it the nod over iPhone X. If you're already in the Apple ecosystem, if you already are using Apple products, I just think that the iPhone X is a fantastic device that takes beautiful pictures. Very happy with the tools that I have for my mobile photography. And finally, number five on my favorite new products for 2017. And this one doesn't get quite as much airplay as the others, but I'll tell you, that Olympus Tough TG5, which you can get for $399 right now, I think it's $50 off the link that I have in the show notes. It is an amazing camera. And what they've done with this Tough series, Olympus, is truly impressive. I have a TG4 that I just love. And I had a TG1 that I just used forever. And the TG4 finally replaced it. But the 5 even takes it to a new place. So one of the things they did with the 5 is that they dropped the megapixel count back down to 12 to make the photo sites a little bit larger and to improve image quality and to improve low light gathering capability. Then they coupled that with a new processor, the TruePic 8 image processor. So you just have a bit more clarity and a bit better low light performance. You can go up to ISO 12,800, up to 20 frames per second continuous shooting, 4K video, which is really nice. And then also you have full HD 1080p, and the 1080p you can shoot up to 120 frames a second. That's really, really pretty cool. The optical zoom that's built in is a 4x zoom. So that gives you a 25 to 100 millimeter equivalent range. with an F2 maximum aperture. And don't send me mail that it's really not F2 when it's because of the size of the sensor and all that. It says F2 on the lens, okay? So that's what I'm going with, all right? And so F.2 maximum aperture. And then what they did on top of that is that they added all sorts of goodies. I mean, goodies that we see in, you know, some of their most expensive cameras. They added the ProShot capability, which where the camera anticipates the shot before you shoot it. So if you're shooting something like a geyser or something like that, you frame and you hold the shutter button down, getting ready to shoot, and then maybe the thing finally goes off, and then you press the shutter button to take the picture. Well, it started just a little bit before that, so you can get the geyser on the way up. Stuff like that, a variable macro system. They took some of the things from their tracker device, where you just have all this great GPS data, and you have information about altitude and water depth, and you know all that kind of stuff. It has both built-in Wi-Fi and GPS. For people who like to spend time outdoors, it is really kind of the ultimate outdoor electronic device. You know, for you know people who are hiking and swimming and snorkeling and doing all that kind of stuff. And you get all this in a $399 package that you can just keep in your pocket, whether you're in the water or climbing a mountain or doing whatever you're going to do. It'll do it with you. I think clearly it is one of my favorite products of 2017, and really kind of show us how much innovation can be packed into a small device, and then how useful these small devices can be. And I think the TG5 and the Spark are two of the best examples for the year. And so I have show notes on all these things. I have links. I have all that good stuff. You know, everyone's going to give you their perspective on what they think the best products are this year. I'm already seeing all the lists, but these are the five that really stood out for me. Comparing the Olympus 45mm prime lenses, and that would be the F1.2, which is the new lens, and the F1.8, which has been around and made my list of great Christmas gifts for photographers a few weeks ago. And by the way, the F1.8 is still on sale, not quite as cheap as it was. I think it was $199 when I talked about it. But I still think it's a very affordable $249, something like that. Just an incredible price. So what I did was, as you know, if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, is that I was in South Carolina for Olympus, where we were testing both the 45mm f1.2 and the 17mm f1.2. And then we also had the 25mm f1.2 with us, even though it had been announced a bit earlier. And it's basically the trio of their pro lens lineup. And then they loaned us EM1 Mark II camera to shoot with them. So at any given moment, I had either the 45mm f1.2 on the EM1 Mark II or the 17. I didn't shoot very much with the 25 because I had shot with it in Iceland, and I felt like I was pretty familiar with that lens. But the other two, you know, these were brand new to me. This was the first time that I had seen either the 45 or the 17. So then what I did to prepare for the trip is that I brought my 45mm f1.8 and my 17mm f1.8. And what I wanted to do was just really see the difference between the lenses. And, you know, we had technical briefings about the new lenses, which were just fascinating. I learned a lot. We actually get to talk to the guys that designed these lenses. Olympus flew them in from Japan so that we could have a breakfast meeting and he could do a presentation and talk about what he was trying to do, you know, the challenges that he had, all that kind of stuff for designing these lenses. And it was fascinating. I learned a lot about bokeh during this presentation. And the way that Olympus classifies bokeh is that there's either ring bokeh, and you know what that is, where it has kind of a bright ring circle and then whatever's in the middle there, a solid bokeh, which looks like a disc, and then feather bokeh, which is very soft, very, very feathery. And what they were striving for with these pro lenses, these three pro lenses, is Feather Boca. And they showed us the actual CA charts and what they do to create the Feather Boca, and how a lens that has Feather Boca, the graph looks one way, and a lens that has solid Boca, the graph looks different. So what was cool is they classify the 45mm f1.8 as having solid bokeh, and the 45mm f1.2 is having feather bokeh. So I'm going great. So what I did was I worked on an article, and I posted it on Sunday on the Digital Story. So I have lots of sample pictures. So I would shoot a shot with one lens and then shoot the same shot with the other lens, and then we could really look at the differences. So we could compare the bokeh difference, we could compare the sharpness difference, and so forth. And not only was it a lot of fun, it was very instructive, and it was just a great opportunity, because here I had technical resources available to me. I was put in a situation where I could just focus on, working with these optics, and then I had the freedom to write anything that I wanted afterwards. The bottom line on this, and, this is what I wrote in the article and what I'm going to talk about right now, is, first of all, the 45mm f1.8 is an excellent lens. I mean, that was one of the very nice takeaways. It hung in there beautifully through my set of tests. Now, the bokeh is different. You can see the examples in my article. And, it just depends. I mean, that is an artistic preference, an artistic consideration. In my mind, ideally, I'd like to have, both types of lenses available to me, and then I can, create the exact kind of image that I want. The other thing is that the sharpness is very good with the f1.8, but it is crazy with the f1.2. We asked this question. You can shoot wide open with, any of the pro lenses at f1.2, and you get amazing results. They're actually designed to shoot wide open. And sometimes if you're shot wide open with an f1.2 lens, for instance, on a portrait, the depth of field is so narrow that you'll get one eye in focus, and then the other one will be out of focus. And what happens with the Olympus lenses is that if you're doing a portrait, and if the eyes are, even close to the same plane, they'll both be in focus. The nose will soften a little bit because it's coming forward, and then you'll get trailing off as you go back on the hair. So the hair will be somewhat in focus around the face, but then it'll get soft rather quickly. And what that means is that you can shoot at f1.2, you can get feather bokeh, you can have the speed, but your eyes are in focus. And this is whether that you're, locking in the focus manually and recomposing, or if you're using eye detection on the camera. It worked equally well both ways. So this is a wonderful luxury, being able to have both eyes in focus at the end of the day, and then still have all the other benefits of shooting f1.2. So as much as I love my f1.8s, and I got two of them, a black and a silver, I will continue to use them. I will continue to love them. They're just great lenses. But these f1.2s were really impressive. And all the work that they put into creating, these little differences really add up when you're shooting with the lens. Now, of course, this does come at a price. The f1.2 weighs 14 ounces compared to 4 ounces for the f1.8. It costs $1,200 compared to the standard price of $399 for the f1.8, which of course right now you can get on sale. And then I think the other thing about the f1.2 is, to really get the most out of it, I think you should put it on a pro body such as the EM1, the EM1 Mark II, or the EM5 Mark II. In terms of balance, it just feels like it's designed for those three cameras. So it really comes down to then, do you need a lens that fantastic? And that is a personal decision. However, if you do need a lens that fantastic, and you do have the budget for $1,200, if you're doing this for a living, if you're doing this for fine art, if you're doing this as a freelance endeavor, if you fall into that category where you really need great quality and still a relatively compact package, the lens is worth every penny. It absolutely is. So nothing but good news out of this. The 1.8 hung in there beautifully and is a great lens. The 1.2 is practically magical. No losers, all winners. It just depends on what you need. I would like to do a report on the 17mm too, and I did a similar testing with it. So we'll see if I can get to that in the near future. But right now I will tell you that that 45 millimeter F1.2, wow, what a lens. So I have something new this week to talk about from VideoBlocks. Of course, I've had something new every week because there's always something going on. They're making my job easy here. This week, when I was hanging out over at the site, which I like to do because, well, quite frankly, it's just so fun. It's one of those rabbit holes you can fall into with your time and then look up and go, oh, wow, that was an hour. So what they have going on this week is the most downloaded motion backgrounds of 2017. So they pulled these together, the most downloaded motion backgrounds. So these are things like flying through outer space, nebula and stars, abstracts, you know, all these ethereal sort of things. You know, just like these great motion backgrounds. Of course, they're generic in the sense that they're not really tied to any particular subject. So they have all sorts of great uses. And, you know, they just come as part of your membership, your VideoBlocks membership. And as I think I mentioned last week, that what I really like about what they do, in addition to just, you know, providing great videos to download and use in our projects, is that they help us discover things within their extensive library by pulling together, you know, these different things, you know, the video download of the month or the video download of the week or this collection of most popular motion backgrounds. And it goes on and on and on. There's a holiday one, you know, great holiday clips, you know, that you can add to your projects, all this stuff. So that, you know, what it does, and I'm sure this is their intention also, it gets you going over to the site regularly to see what's going on. Well, if you think about it, they don't really need for you to do that once you've signed up, right? I mean, they basically already have your $149. So why would they encourage you to come back? Well, because they view this as a value proposition. They want you to get your money's worth out of this. And if you download and use, let's say, 4 or 5 videos a year, you're ahead of the game. If you download and use 10 videos a year, you're way ahead of the game. And if you're way ahead of the game, then you're going to feel good about your investment. And probably when it comes time to renew, you'll probably consider renewing. So, you know, they're very smart that way and, you know, help keeping us excited about this product. Meantime, as a byproduct of that, is that it's just a lot of fun. It's just a lot of fun to hang out and look at what they've pulled together to look at these videos. These clips are just a blast. And as I've also mentioned this before, it gets you thinking about how can I use this? How can I use this? What could I do with that? There's a tile that runs on all the pages of the digital story, the Story Blocks tile. Click on that. It'll take you over to our landing page where you can sign up for VideoBlocks for $149 a year. It's a great value, and there's just a ton of content in there. All right, I want to talk about Patreon for a second because, well, I got a note from them. Got a note from them, I think it was last week. They're changing around how the service fees are paid. And essentially what they did was that they moved the service fees from a deduction from me to an add-on for you. That works out. I was corresponding with one of our members. That works out to, for our Inner Circle members, an extra 50 cents a month, which would work out to be $6 a year. So I thought I'd better address this in case you got the email and you just didn't have time to look at it and you're wondering what's going on. So what they said was a new service fee of 2.9% plus 35 cents will be paid by patrons for each individual pledge starting on December 18th. This streamlines fees for both creators and patrons to ensure that you pay, and you know, it's written to me as a creator, no more than 5%. What they've done is instead of me paying 5% plus service fees and all that, where you can't really figure out what you're supposed to get each month, now I just pay the straight 5%. And then you guys are paying the 2.9% plus 35 cents, which works out to be, for Inner Circle members, as I said earlier, 50 cents a month. So instead of $5 a month, it's $5.50 a month if you look at the bottom line price. So I was thinking about this, and as you know, this isn't the original thing that I proposed to you. I proposed $5 a month for Inner Circle, and now it's $5.50. So I want to make that up to you. Believe me, we weren't, as creators, we were not consulted on this. We had no say about it. We actually found out about it in the same week that you guys did. So this is something that Patreon did on their own, and at least they didn't ask my opinion on it. Because if they asked my opinion, I would say, leave it the way that it is. Leave it the way that we were doing it earlier. But they did not. So to make it up to you, because I don't want you to feel like, okay, you know, what did I get myself into here? So for January, for our Inner Circle members, what I'm going to do is instead of posting two videos for January, I'm going to post a third video also. So we'll have a video for Capture One Pro 10 training video. We'll have a video for photos for Mac OS High Sierra. And I will add a Luminar video to the mix for January. And that is just my way of saying that thank you for, you know, bearing with this change that Patreon made. And I hope that the extra video will serve as an olive branch, you know, for those of you that are concerned about it. And, you know, if you want to write me, I mean, I did have one Inner Circle member write me about it, and we talked about it, and he actually helped me crunch the numbers and all that. But if you want to write me about it, also feel free to do that. That should be it for 2018. I'm not changing the Inner Circle pledge amount in 2018, and hopefully Patreon now has got everything sorted out, so we should be where we're supposed to be. And as I said, as a thank you, for bearing with this change, I'm going to add an extra video for Inner Circle members in January. Three videos in January, and all three of them are fun. Alrighty. And of course, if you want to become an Inner Circle member and get in on these videos and get in on the Nimble Photographer podcast and get in on, you know, just really helping us keep the lights on with this podcast, there's a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can join today, become an Inner Circle member, and right away, all the benefits for Inner Circle-ality is available to you. Thanks so much. And finally, just want to wrap up with saying thank you to our friends at Red River Paper. As I mentioned last week, they're offering free ground shipping for all of their paper products. And all you have to do is go to our landing page. You get to that through the Red River tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Take you to our landing page. There's an offer code there and the whole deal. And then that way you'll get free ground shipping on any of your orders. One of the things that I did when I was in South Carolina, I saw a theme that I'm going to do for fine art cards. I'll tell you. I'll even tell you what it was. I'll tell you right now. I'm going to give it away. Let the cat out of the bag. So I was walking around Charleston, South Carolina, and a lot of folks had these lovely window boxes. And even though we're in December, they were full of flowers, and the flowers were gorgeous. And then they had, you know, these, you know, the nice decoration around it and the great buildings and all that stuff. And I said, you know, those would make fantastic fine art cards. So I started shooting these window boxes, and I think I have around 10 different ones, 8 or 10 different ones. I'm going to take the 6 best, and I'm going to make a set of fine art greeting cards. This will be my a new set. I haven't done one since I did the Cards of Cuba. And then I'll use those for gifts. And they're going to look really great because it's going to be a set of fine art cards that has 6 of these different window boxes in them. And maybe I'll put 2 of each. So there'll be a set of 12 cards in a box. You know, with the envelopes, I can get all of this stuff, all these supplies at Red River Paper. They fix me up. All I got to do is put the kit together. This was in my mind when I was in Charleston. It's like, hey, I want to do something. I want to do a new set of fine art cards. These window boxes just jumped out at me. And the next thing you know, it's all right there. It's all right there. And I should be able to get to printing actually later this week. This is the kind of stuff that you can do, you know, when you get your printing mojo going. It's really a lot of fun. Red River Paper, longest-running sponsor of Digital Story. They also have a rockin' Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Alrighty, that's going to do it for me this week. Lots of fun stuff. I had a great time in South Carolina. I hope you have a chance to look at the report on the 45mm lenses. And I hope you liked some of my suggestions anyway for best photo products for 2017. Come back next week. More going on and working on all sorts of good stuff. Until then, have a great week. I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.